We know farm animals as hamburgers, pork chops, and chicken nuggets. But Jeffrey Mason says there's much more to farm animals than that. They live rich, emotionally complex lives. Mason's the author of a book called The Pig Who Sang to the Moon. The title comes from a famous pig in New Zealand who swam in the ocean every day and, reportedly, sang to the moon. According to Mason, pigs are some of the most complex creatures around.
They're very much like dogs. They know their names. They wag their tails. They're also a bit like cats because they have a certain independence. You know, the old saying that dogs look up to you, cats look down at you, but pigs is equal. And they also, in some ways, resemble elephants. They have unique families. They have mixed paternity. They have very strong family bonds that allow them to use distress signals. And that's the purpose of squealing for a young pig. The miracle I find is they trust us so much.
Yeah.
When I was on a farm in Northern California, actually not a farm, it was a sanctuary, which is a big difference, of course. So the pigs somehow knew that they were not going to be killed. They would follow me around. I made friends with one pig by rubbing her belly a couple times, and then she would not leave my side for the whole afternoon. When I wandered around the hills, she was there just like a dog. It was quite marvelous.
One of the more troubling aspects of the story you tell is that you say pigs are actually very much like humans. Can you explain that to me?
Well, I say they're like humans because we tend to use their organs now, as you know, and a lot of experiments use pigs because their flesh is similar to ours. In many ways, they resemble us. They're very intelligent. They're very aware of us. Just as we are aware of them, the females have a deeply ingrained instinct to protect their young. They make these quite elaborate nests. The female will often walk for miles to find the right spot to build a nest. And one of the things that I just learned, in which they're similar to human females, is that a mother pig will make the bed for her young every single night.
One of the things I think your critics...
And they sing to the moon, which is why I have the title.
Yeah. One of the things I think your critics often say is that you're anthropomorphizing the animals that you look at.
That's correct. But you know, they're saying that less and less. Scientists have pretty much given that up because they realize that we need human empathy and sympathy in order to understand other animals. In fact, in order to understand other human beings, we wouldn't get very far if we didn't engage our imaginations. So that's going by the wayside. I've noticed that there was an excellent book published recently on anthropomorphism by scientists arguing that we do need it after all.
Well, just before we leave that for a moment, though, I mean, there is no way to actually ask a pig and get a response that we can be absolutely certain of. So aren't you in some ways looking at a pig's behavior and saying, if that pig were human, this is what that behavior would mean?
Well, not quite, because, I mean, you can't know with another person either except what they tell you. And if you're a born skeptic and you say, well, I don't care what they say, I don't believe them. I mean, how do I know that they're experiencing what I'm experiencing? And in fact, that is a major problem in philosophy. How do we know that the love I feel is similar to the love you feel, or the anger, or the enjoyment, disappointment, any of the major emotions that we experience? We can never know what another person, what that subjective experience is like for another person. But we don't go very far wrong when we assume it's very similar to ours. And the way we do this, of course, is scientists tell us increasingly look at the brains, and brains do very similar things when they're under the influence of an emotion. And it turns out that neuroscientists who study the brains of animals say that we're remarkably similar when it comes to the important emotion centers of the brain. There's almost no difference in the brains of most mammals, including humans, when it comes to the amygdala. And they've been able to do these studies where they actually get images that are almost identical. So I think that's another clue. And I was talking to Panksepp, who's the great scholar in this area, and he said no neuroscientist who works in this area even has a question about this. Of course, they experience emotions very similar to ours.
And then there is anecdotal evidence.
Yes, I was thinking that so much of the books I like tend to be stories. Somebody sees something remarkable in the forest or the woods or even on their farm, and they report it. And if it's merely an observer like you or me reporting it, it tends to be branded as a mere anecdote. But if a scientist notices it, then it's called data. And I think they're backing down a little bit on that one too, because when you get enough of them, you have to start paying attention. And my favorite story, which I just learned on this trip, is David Meach, who's probably the world's greatest expert on wolves. And he happened to notice something very strange quite recently where a wolf had cornered an antelope and he was filming it in the wild. And suddenly the antelope fell down into a play bow. You know what that is? You've seen that with dogs where they get on, they fall down on their front paws to let the other dog know, let's play. And they never, if you agree to play, then you got to play. They take this from wolves, of course. Dogs basically are wolves. And this wolf looked astonished, and it was like his instinct was telling him, you got to obey. So he fell down on his all fours, too, to play. And the fawn leapt over his back and was away. And David Meach remarked, I've never seen anything like it. What could this be? Now, it's an anecdote, of course. But it's the kind of anecdote that people would not tell before, because if you're not prepared to see certain things, then you won't see them. And I think there's ever greater preparedness on the part of scientists to look at these slightly strange and anomalous experiences and say, let's start collecting them. So there are more and more of them. And again, I think scientists are pretty much giving up on that.
Of course, some of this is all in how you tell the stories, isn't it? I mean, you're very persuasive in The Pig Who Sang to the Moon. You give anecdote after anecdote, and you're persuasive in interpreting them. The former pig farmer who made the movie Babe, for instance, talks about seeing, yes, looking at pigs and seeing essentially a human response.
Well, yes, you know, I didn't answer fully when you said in what way do they resemble humans, but I have often looked into a pig's eye, and it's a very strange experience. I get that also when I look in cow's eyes. Now, you don't get that with a chicken. There are other things that chickens do that make you think, my God, they're birds. They're like parrots. But when you look into a pig's eye and you look into a cow's eye, there's a kind of depth there. It feels like something, somebody is looking back at you, a real person or a personality. I feel that very strongly, and I think that anybody who takes the time to do that, it's almost an uncanny experience to see this person looking back at you and sometimes pleading, don't hurt me.
Or they'll look back at you and do something that suggests they didn't like what you did to them. There was another story, a Norwegian farmer who tapped his pig with a hammer.
Right. That's right. And the pig definitely did not like it. And, you know, pig's a very powerful animal. In this case, the pig took his whole arm into his mouth. And, I mean, any farmer will tell you if a pig has your hand or arm in his mouth, you're in big trouble because they have very powerful jaws and could snap them like a twig. Yeah. And he just put enough pressure and looked into the eye of this Norwegian farmer. And it was basically, don't do that again, okay?
Now, let's move on to chickens, because everybody looks at chickens and sees them as you don't look at a chicken in the eye and expect to have intelligence return. But you say chickens are quite friendly and even emotional. How is that possible?
Well, they are very emotional. And again, like pigs, you know, they're very good. They have very strong family ties. You know, in every case, the way to understand these animals is to look at their ancestors. And in the case of chickens, we have to look at the northern red jungle fowl, which is a very shy animal. And so, like cats, it's a bit of a miracle that chickens on farms will often want to be with us and will make very good companions. And they are birds. That's the main thing to remember about them. And like birds, they depend on sounds. Very important that they make different sounds. Now at the University of California, Davis, they're studying chicken sounds and have found so far 19 different calls that they make, including warning. You know, there was a great fuss made some years ago when they discovered vervet monkeys, that they have different calls for the different kinds of dangers. Well, it turns out that chickens do exactly that. They have a special call to alert other chickens of the fact that there's an aerial predator as opposed to a ground predator. And they've tested this, and every time they say aerial predator, the other chickens look up to see what's coming. And if they say ground, they look along the ground to see who's coming to get them. And they've now started studying the audience effect in chickens, which is fascinating. These are roosters who say something, make a call, depending on who the audience is. If it's a favorite hen and they want her to have a particularly tasty morsel, they will make a particular sound. And that hen will come running. It's like, look what I've got for you. She comes straight over. Yeah. And this, again, is a brand new area of research. Nobody suspected 20 or 30 years ago that chickens made any sounds worthy of our attention.
One of the things that people suggest is that if we don't care for animals in the way that we're caring for them now, I guess, there would be fewer of them. And I guess that's sort of borne out by the need for a chicken sanctuary. If you didn't have such a thing, would chickens be able to survive in the wild?
Well, you know, chickens go feral very quickly, very much like cats and pigs. Pigs, chickens, and cats go feral very quickly. So if nobody was taking care of chickens, they would take care of themselves very rapidly. Now, of course, their numbers would decrease, but it would be a natural decrease. They'd be like every other wild animal. They'd find a place, they'd find a niche, and they would occupy that niche, and those that could would survive and the others would not. They would survive in a very different way. I mean, anybody who's ever seen, I've seen wild chickens, that is Burmese jungle fowl, red jungle fowl, and they're beautiful animals. They're powerful flyers. They roost in trees. They're marvelous to behold. And some chickens, you can still see that, the remnants of the beauty of their wild state. Now, we breed them to breed this out of them. So we make them huge. We want them to grow as quickly as possible for as little money as possible so that they can be killed as quickly as possible. And that, of course, is not what they're meant to do in the wild. They're birds, and they often live 15 or 20 years in the wild. Their average length of life in captivity is 42 days. So we're depriving them of an enormous potential of life.
Jeffrey Mason is the author of The Pig Who Sang to the Moon.